Greetings from the voice of Allan Kardec.
And welcome from the voice of the spirits.
We're here once again to take you on another audio journey through the Spirits book by Allan Kardec. On today's journey, we will continue with the conclusion.
Enjoy.
Section 7. Spiritism is presented under three different aspects: the manifestations, the philosophical and moral principles deduced from the manifestations, and the practical applications of those principles. Hence, there are three classes or three degrees of its adherents. First, those who believe in the manifestations and limit themselves to proving them. It is for them a science of experimentation. Second, those who comprehend its moral consequences. Third, those who practiced or endeavor to practice its morality. Whatever may be the scientific or moral point of view from which these strange phenomena are regarded, everyone perceives that they represent a new order of ideas whose consequences will promote a profound modification for the better in the state of humankind. As for our adversaries, we may also group them into three categories. In the first are those who systematically deny everything new or anything that does not proceed from their own minds, and who address the issue without knowing its cause. To this class belong all those who admit nothing beyond the testimony of their senses. They have seen nothing and want to see nothing, even less to delve into anything. They would even become troubled if they saw things too clearly, afraid of being forced to confess that they have been wrong. For them, Spiritism is a fantasy, an insanity, a utopia. It has no real existence, and that is the end of the matter. These are the unbending disbelievers. At their side are those who have only condescended to glance at the subject long enough to ease their conscience in order to be able to say, "I wanted to see, but have seen nothing." They do not understand that it might require more than half an hour to take in its entire science. In the second category are those who know very well what to think of the reality of the phenomena, but they nevertheless oppose them for reasons of personal interest. They know that Spiritism is authentic, but they fear its consequences and attack it as an enemy. In the third category are those who find in Spiritist morals a censure that is too severe for their behavior and inclinations. If they were to take Spiritism seriously, it would inconvenience them. They neither reject nor accept it, but prefer to shut their eyes to it. The first are swayed by pride and presumption, the second by ambition, and the third by selfishness. Of course, since these causes of opposition lack consistency, they must disappear with time. We would seek in vain for a fourth class of antagonists who would base their opposition on evidence that would demonstrate a conscientious and detailed study of the issue. People have discounted Spiritism, but no one has presented a serious and irrefutable demonstration to the contrary. It would be presuming too much of human nature to believe that it could suddenly be transformed by Spiritist ideas. Acting on these ideas will certainly differ in degree of intensity among those who profess them. Whatever their results may be, even if weak, they will nevertheless represent an improvement. If nothing else, they would provide proof of the existence of an extracorporeal world, which in itself would negate materialist doctrines. This is the result of a simple observation of the phenomena, but among those who comprehend the Spiritist philosophy and see in it something more than the more or less curious phenomena, there are other effects. The first and most general is that of developing a religious sentiment, even in those who, without being materialist, are indifferent to spiritual things. For them, this will result in a loss of the fear of death. We are not saying they will desire death, far from it, for Spiritists will defend their lives like anyone else, but they will feel indifferent about it, which will enable them to accept inevitable death without complaint or regret, and be assured that a happier state will ensue. The second effect, perhaps as general as the first, is resignation in the face of life's afflictions. Spiritism enables us to see things from such a height that earthly life loses three-fourths of its importance and we are no longer disturbed by its tribulations. Hence, we have more courage in our troubles and more moderation in our desires. We also have an aversion to the desire to shorten our own life, for Spiritist knowledge teaches that suicide always causes the loss of what it was intended to gain. The certainty of a future where happiness depends on ourselves, along with the possibility of establishing relationships with those who are dear to us, provide supreme consolation to our spirit. Our horizons are widened to infinity by our constant vision of the life beyond the grave, a life whose deepest mysteries we are allowed to probe. The third effect is that of awakening tolerance for others' shortcomings. It must be admitted, however, that selfishness and everything that issues from it are the most tenacious sentiments in humans, and consequently the most difficult to uproot. We can make voluntary sacrifices provided they cost us nothing, and especially provided they deprive us of nothing. Money still exerts an irresistible attraction to the majority of humankind, and very few understand the words superfluous in connection with their own selves. Thus, the renunciation of the self is the most eminent sign of progress. Section 8. Some people have asked, do spirits teach us a new morality, something superior to what Christ taught? And if this morality is none other than that of the gospel, what has Spiritism come to do? This reasoning is strangely familiar to that of Caliph Omar in speaking of the Library of Alexandria. If it contains only what is found in the Quran, it is useless and should therefore be burned. If it contains anything else, it is evil and should be burned. Indeed, Spiritism does not contain a different morality than that of Jesus. But we must in turn ask, hadn't the law of God already been revealed by Moses to humans before the advent of Christ? Isn't Christ's doctrine found in the Decalogue? And will it therefore be stated that Jesus had no reason to give his moral teachings? We will ask those who deny the usefulness of Spiritist morality why Christ's morality is practiced so little, and why even those who proclaim its sublimity are the first to violate the first of its laws, universal charity. The spirits have come not only to confirm Christ's morality, but also to show us its practical usefulness. They render intelligible and patent certain truths that have only been taught under allegorical form. And alongside morality, the spirits have come to define for us the most abstract problems of psychology. Jesus came to show humankind the road of true goodness. Since God sent him to remind humans of God's forgotten law, why would God not send the spirits to remind them more precisely now that they have forgotten it for the sake of pride and cupidity? Who would dare to place limits on God's power or to stipulate the divine ways? Who will say that the appointed time has not arrived, as the spirits have affirmed, and that the days have not arrived in which truth, badly comprehended or falsely interpreted, must be ostensibly revealed to humankind to accelerate their advancement? Is there not something providential in the spirit manifestations being produced simultaneously all over the globe? It is not a single individual, a prophet, who has come to warn us. Instead, the light is shining far and wide, and a whole new world is unfolding before our eyes. Just as the invention of the microscope has revealed the unsuspected world of the infinitely small, and as the telescope has revealed the myriads of unsuspected worlds, spirit communications have revealed the existence of an invisible world surrounding us, whose inhabitants rub elbows with us at every moment, participating in everything we do despite our will. Yet, in a short time, the existence of that world that surely awaits all of us will be as incontestable as the microscopic world and the great globes lost in space. Would it not have been to our advantage, therefore, to have been given notice of this world and to have been initiated into the mysteries of the life beyond the grave? It is true that these discoveries, if we may call them such, are contrary to certain established ideas. However, is it not true that all great scientific discoveries have also modified and even overthrown the most established concepts? Has it not been necessary for our self-centeredness to bow down before the evidence? The same will occur with Spiritism, and soon it will have the rights of citizenship among the rest of the areas of human knowledge. Communications with the beings beyond the grave have enabled us, as a result, to comprehend and behold our future life, and to initiate us into the sorrows and joys that await us according to our merits. They have led persons to spiritualism, persons who did not see in human beings anything more than matter, anything more than an organized machine. Hence, we are correct in stating that Spiritism has killed materialism because of these communications. Had it produced nothing else, the social order would still have to be grateful for that. But it does even more by showing the inevitable consequences of evil and consequently the necessity of the good. The number of those in whom it has aroused better sentiments, neutralizing their evil inclinations and turning them from wrongdoing, is greater than supposed and is increasing every day. For them, the future is no longer a vague idea nor a simple hope, but a reality that can be comprehended and explained once they see and hear those who have gone before us as they lament or rejoice over what they did on earth. Those who witness these communications are led to reflect on them and to feel the need to know, judge, and amend themselves. Section 9. The adversaries of Spiritism were quick to arm themselves against it by using some differences of opinion concerning certain points of the doctrine. It is not surprising that at the beginning of any science, contradictory theories appear that are based on incomplete observations, while each individual is still considering it from his or her own point of view. However, three-fourths of such theories with regard to Spiritism have already been scuttled in the light of more in-depth studies, beginning with the theory that attributes all spirit communications to the spirit of evil, as if it were impossible for God to send good spirits to humankind instead. Such is an absurd doctrine because it is belied by the facts and is impious because it is a denial of the power and the goodness of the Creator. The spirits have always advised us not to trouble ourselves with differences of opinion, since unity will occur and has already occurred concerning the majority of the issues, whereas differences are disappearing day by day. To the question, while awaiting unity, upon what basis can an impartial and disinterested inquirer formulate a judgment? The spirits have given us this response.
The purest light is not eclipsed by any cloud. The flawless diamond is the one of greatest value. So judge the spirits by the purity of their teachings. Do not forget that among spirits there are those who have not yet freed themselves from the ideas of earthly life. Learn to distinguish them by their language. Judge them by the sum of what they tell you. See whether there is logical sequence in their ideas and whether there is anything in what they say that reveals ignorance, pride, or malevolence. In other words, whether their expressions are always marked with the stamp of wisdom that reveals true superiority. If your world were inaccessible to error, it would be perfect. But it is far from perfection because you are still learning to distinguish error from truth. You need the lessons of experience to exercise your judgment and to enable you to evolve. Unity will be found on the side where good has never been mixed with evil. It is on that side that people will be connected with one another through the force of circumstances, for they will realize that the truth lies there. Besides, what do a few variances that are more a matter of form than depth matter? Observe that the fundamental principles of Spiritism are the same everywhere, and must unite you all in a common thought, the love of God and the practice of the good. Therefore, no matter what may be the mode of progression that is accepted or the normal conditions of your future existence, the final aim is always the same, doing good, and as you know, there are not two ways of doing it.
If among the followers of Spiritism there are those who differ in their opinions about some points of its theory, all of them are nevertheless in agreement on the fundamental points. Thus, there is unity, except on the part of a very small number who do not yet accept the intervention of spirits in the manifestations, either attributing them to purely physical causes, contrary to the axiom that every intelligent effect must have an intelligent cause, or to the reflection of our own thought, disproved by the facts. The remaining points are secondary and in no way damage the fundamental basis. There may be other schools that seek enlightenment concerning the as yet controversial parts of the science, but there must not be rival sects. There should only be antagonism between those who desire to do good and those who have done or would desire to do evil. However, there is no authentic spiritist who, after having adopted the great moral maxims taught by the spirits, could ever desire evil or wish evil upon a neighbor, whatever their difference of opinion. If any such school is in error, sooner or later it will be enlightened if there is good faith and an absence of prejudice. While they wait, all schools possess a common bond that should unite them in the same thought. All of them have the same objective. The course they take matters little, provided it leads to this objective. No school should impose its opinion through material or moral force, and the one that anathematized another would be on a false path, for it would obviously be acting under the influence of evil spirits. Reason must always be the last argument, and moderation will better ensure the triumph of the truth than diatribes full of the poison of envy and jealousy. Good spirits preach only unity and love for one's neighbor, and a malevolent or uncharitable thought could never proceed from a pure source. In order to conclude, let us hear the counsels of St. Augustine's spirit concerning the subject.
For a long time, humans have torn at one another and have anathematized one another in the name of a God of peace and of mercy, offending God through such sacrilege. Spiritism is the bond that will someday unite them, for it will show them where the truth is and where the error lies. For some time to come, however, there will continue to be scribes and Pharisees who will deny it as they denied the Christ. Would you like to know which spirits influence the various sects that divide the world? Judge them by their deeds and by their principles. Good spirits have never instigated evil. They have never counseled or condoned murder and violence. They have never aroused party hatreds, the thirst for wealth, or the greed for earthly things. Only persons who are good, humane, and benevolent towards all are their favorites, as they are also Jesus's favorites, for they follow the path that leads to him.
St. Augustine.